What's good, Playconomists, and welcome to another episode of the Playconomics Podcast, where we're breaking down the business behind your favorite video games and our favorite video games, provided you financial context for industry trends. I'm one of your hosts, Matt Viscari, and Bobby is still in Miami, and there's nothing I can do about it, but Playconomics must go on, so let's get into it. What's good, everyone? And we are starting today. We're getting right into it. We're doing Breaking Down the Business as our first segment today on this podcast. And what we're starting with is Hogwarts Legacy reigns supreme in 2023. And this means two things. One, Harry Potter is real, real, real popular. This is the first time since 2008 that a game not named Call of Duty or a Rockstar game, so a GTA or a Red Dead, has not been the highest selling game of the year. Jesus H. Christ. I'm happy for Hogwarts Legacy. I'm sad for the video game industry, because this does also tie into the fact that year over year in December and for the for Q4 of 2023, games were up 1% year over year growth. 1% is better than being down, so I'm happy to see it. But what this means for video games and a greater topic that I want to touch on today is that we are seeing the exact same thing that happened to movies happen to video games now. There are very expensive, very beloved, and very, very, very important IP that exist in this world. Harry Potter's, the Marvel superheroes, the DC superheroes. There is a ton of Lord of the Rings, a ton of just beloved IP that we are going to constantly see be shaped into video games over the next couple years. Hogwarts Legacy is proof in concept that not only does it work, you don't need to throw out an absolute banger of a year. It's a good game. I'm not saying anything against it, but it wasn't the best game of last year. Baldur's Gate 3 was the best game of last year, but it wasn't the highest selling game. Spider-Man 2 was a better game than this. Alan Wake 2 was a better game than this. The important piece of this is the Harry Potter connection. And it's wild to see that just taking the name of a game and making a 8 out of 10 game, which, good for the studio, because they could have absolutely butchered this like a lot of studios do when they get IP like this. They could have butchered this game, but they made it a pretty good game, and this is the result. You give a pretty good game, and it beats out Call of Duty, and it beats out Rockstar. That's insane. It is insane. And what we're going to see, and like we've talked about on the podcast literally ad nauseum, is that games are getting more expensive, and games are taking longer to develop. A recipe for absolute disaster for most studios. The big name studios, the Xbox, the PlayStation, the Nintendo, they got money to throw at this issue. They just need time to get their first party game into your hands. And they don't want to take any risk on a big budget new IP. So while you're waiting for Hellblade 2, while you're waiting for The Last of Us 3, while you're waiting for God of War, Ragnarok, whatever is going to be the next iteration of God of War, while you're waiting for Spider-Man 3, while you're waiting for the new Halo, they're going to start giving you IP that they know will deliver. Xbox is going to give you Blade. Sony's going to give you Venom very, very soon. Then they're going to give you Wolverine. Then they're going to start giving you Jean Grey. They're going to start giving you all the Marvel DC universe, and then they're all going to pile in together, and it's going to be this whole thing. and we're going to start seeing video games get more and more expensive, and you're going to start seeing these IP get licensed out, and this is a wave and a response to games cannot get out quick enough anymore, and they're too much money to risk on new IP that we're now leveraging beloved IP from different media. And listen, I'm going to play a Blade game. Spider-Man's not my thing, but if they came out with another Batman game, I'd play it. They came out with a Superman game, I'd give it a try. They came out with a Hulk game. Hulk, Insomniac, Rockstar, Ninja Theory. Make a Hulk game. Come on. I'm begging you. I am begging you. But the biggest thing here is that Hogwarts Legacy is a proven point that IP sells. And if people love it, people will buy it. Let's start turning a profit in the video game industry with it, and let's start floating the cost of some of them high budget IP that are developed internally by Xbox, Sony, and Nintendo. The biggest thing that I see as an issue for this is that the small developers are still very much at risk of high budget, long lead time. How do we float until then? And what happens if it flops? A small developer is screwed. They don't have access to IP like this. They're not going to be able to say, well, we got a Wolverine game coming out in 2 years. It could float us just in case this new cool indie IP that we're working on, if it flops. They can't do that. But the Microsofts of the world, the PlayStations of the world, they're going to double down. They're going to secure their product, and they're going to make sure that they have consistent cash revenue throughout the lifespan of all of their big first-party games so that they don't have the pressure. They want 7 years to develop a God of War. They got it. You are not seeing another God of War on the PS5. I guarantee it. You heard it here. I put my life on it. All of the games that come out now per generation are exclusive to that generation. There is no more, we get two Gods of War on the PS2, PS, or the PS3. There's no, we get two Halos on the 360. That shit ain't happening. It's not happening. You're getting one. You're getting one of each major IP on the consoles now. And I feel bad for the small developers because they're just, I don't want to say up a creek, but it's hard out there. It is hard out there to be an indie gamer right now. But listen, I'm proud of you, Hogwarts Legacy. I'm proud of you. Good for you. And now, something I didn't want to cover on the podcast, but it's been so much in the news, and it's a game that I personally tried, got about 15 seconds into it after character creation, was like, this is hot garbage. I'm not playing this. Reminded me so much of a game that I hated. Called my brother and was like, listen, this game's exactly like Craftopia. Yeah, Craftopia. I played what PAL World started as. Craftopia. Craptopia. Crap World. It's a bad game. I get the zeitgeist. I understand it. It's funny. It's Pokemon with guns. People seem to love it. It's another survival game. I'm not getting into it. And what we're going to start this PAL World segment off with, besides my complete rant that I hate this game, I'll never get into it, and I will not play this game under any circumstance, is we're going to give you the X Go and Give It To You segment right now, because we have a tweet by Xbox Curator, and I'm showing it to you on the screen, and I think it perfectly sums up the real reason why it's funny that PAL World is an important game. Meme Raids, Pokemon. You're just a cheap fucking knockoff, PAL World. Oh, no, no. I'm an upgrade. And that's what everyone's concerned about, because this game is currently in alpha testing. And people are like, this is the new Pokemon. Pokemon's on the Xbox. Pokemon's on the PC. Pokemon's still not on the PlayStation. it's concerning if I'm Pokemon, because all of the other knockoffs that have tried and failed at taking the Pokemon formula and applying it to their own game, getting tied up in a lawsuit, or just their game being absolute crap, Pal World succeeded. And I'm not going to say it's an adult version of Pokemon, because at the end of the day, it's still a pretty childish-looking video game. And I haven't gotten into it, so I can't give you a full review or anything, or how everything is with this game. But from what I gathered in my very short time of playing this game, is that it's Craftopia polished up a little bit to have some Pokemon in it. With that being said, it is taking the world by the goddamn balls. And for those of you who have not heard and have no idea what game I've been talking about, is Pal World is basically Pokemon. If they were constantly wavering around guns, you could eat them. It was a survival-based game, and at any time, you can unalive your Pokemon. It's an insane concept. I love that it exists because it puts pressure on Pokemon. Do I think this is going to replace Pokemon? No. Who would play a game with Pokemon with guns? Literally everybody. Who would have thought? I thought it was going to be an absolute instant flop. I was wrong. Listen, they took advantage of the meme concept. In my opinion, that's why it's being so successful right now. I digress. This isn't going to make Pokemon shake. They're not like, well, we're not Pokemon, or we're going to get knocked off in the Pokemon genre. They have their own genre of game because there is no other Pokemon. It's just cheap knockoffs and this one Pal World upgrade. What Pokemon, I hope, is seeing from Pal World is that if you put it on other consoles, if you deliver a real, true open world experience, if you deliver on making your game as good as possible, everyone on the planet wants to play it. Could you imagine if they fixed up Pokemon Scarlet? It wasn't buggy. The graphics were Xbox One-esque. Do you know how many people would play on an Xbox, on a PlayStation, on the PC? Literally everyone. Everyone knows what Pokemon is. Everybody would try it. I'm hoping that this is a wake-up call to Nintendo, because they did some amazing sales numbers with Pal World. So far in the last 3 days, I've sold over 4 million copies after releasing only on Xbox and PC. This obviously does not count anyone that's downloaded it through Game Pass, and has boasted more concurrent players on Steam than Elden Ring, BG3, Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk, Counter-Strike 2, and Dota 2. And it is not done. I think this game has not yet peaked. Recently in a tweet released by Pal World, their server status is in shambles because they were not expecting so many people to play. They had 70 or 700,000 concurrent players, and poof, game exploded. A lot of people can't play it. They're having difficulties getting people online into it. I was able to log into it immediately, so I'm assuming that they were able to remedy these issues. They're working very, very, very close with Epic Games in order to make sure that this is up and running, because people absolutely love it. And again, it's an alpha, so take everything with a grain of salt while you're experiencing the game. Try it out, though, because the more success this has, I think the bigger push it is going to be for Pokemon. And I'm going to end this segment off with, is this a serious threat to Pokemon? No. Pal World is not a serious threat to Pokemon. And like I said earlier in the episode, this isn't a threat to Pokemon. This is a wake-up call to Pokemon that there is untapped resources. I'm sure Pokemon is aware that everybody on the planet would play their game if it was on an Xbox, a PlayStation, and continuing to be on or it's on PC of some sort. They're able to make emulators and things like that. Or they're legal emulators where you could play anything and make mods and things like that, and you could absolutely develop this on your own. on PC, you get things like Pokemon Crystal Legacy, Emerald Kaizo. What I want to come from this is for Pokemon to realize that they have an amazing product and to start giving it out to everyone and to start making sure that more people have access. They put themselves in such a corner because a lot of Nintendo's marketplace is that you could exclusively play these things on your Switch and that's it. It's the only way to experience it. If you want it, you have to buy a Switch. And that market technique is right. So I don't think this is going to work. I don't think this will be a wake-up call for Nintendo. But, god damn, do people want to play Pokemon. That's all I hear from this Pal World story. And let's be honest. If they just released Heart Gold and Soul Silver again and put it on the PC, I would buy 15 copies. I really. But we're done talking about Pal World and we're transitioning into a light topic. The Xbox Developer Direct. I'm gonna summarize it real quick, give you about 2 minutes on it because we have a full episode link should be below me right now on my full reaction to the Xbox Developer Direct and a in-depth overview of what we saw. Fantastic games. Highlights of it: Xbox is going to have 2 or 3 instant game of the year contenders if they come out in 2024 like they're supposed to. Avowed, instant game of the year contender. Indiana Jones, instant game of the year contender. Hellblade 2, instant game of the year contender. I personally think Hellblade is going to sweep. I think it has the best opportunity. The one caveat that I've been hearing, and specifically shout out to Jampack Sam for really calling attention to this in one of his shorts the other day, the original Hellblade was about 7 to 9 hours based on Ninja Theory's intended amount of time it should take you to play. This is going to be similar. It's going to be very story driven, but it's going to be short. And it was a critique that I called out in the full episode that we did earlier this weekend. That could keep it from getting a game of the year nod. If it really is 7 to 9 hours for a $50 game, which I love the decrease in price because it's a short game, but it really has me worried. Hellblade, you need to give me more than 9 hours. Can you get to 10? Can you get to 15? Can you do it? Can you do it? Because then it's instant game of the year. If you get to 15 hours, instant game of the year. I know I said if it was going to be 10 or 15, it would be bad. I take it back. Give me 15 hours. Give me 15 hours. Then the other big takeaway from the Xbox Developer Direct is that they are clearly making a push not only to strengthen their relationship with Square Enix, but also push into the Eastern market with Visions of Mana. And it's a refresh of the Mana series. I think the only one I've ever actually like dove into and played was Swords of Mana on the Game Boy Advance. Fantastic game. I had no idea this game continued to be a series. I thought this was a one-off. I'm completely wrong on that. Cannot wait to play this game. A little cartoonish and kiddie for my taste, but I'm going to give it a run, and I'm hoping that it brings every childhood fantasy I had of playing Swords of Mana to the big screen on Xbox. Again, full episode link below. Go check it out if you want our full in-depth details on what we thought of the Xbox Developer Direct. I'm going to transition really quickly into what we've been playing because it is adjacent to the Xbox Developer Direct. I played Hellblade. And I want to apologize to Ninja Theory and Hellblade for the comments that I made on the Developer Direct episode that we did on that came out on Saturday. I said I wanted to see combat. And I said, if the combat is like this, I'm going to need proof that you can play it like this. And that was my own ignorance. I hadn't played Hellblade, the original. So I downloaded it because it's free on Game Pass right now. And god damn, what a game. What a game. I'm about 2 hours in. I'm probably going to finish it tonight because Sarah's not home. The voices are insane. How fun they make this game. And just It's a beautiful experience. Jesus Christ. I'm almost glad it's only 8 hours because I'm going to finish it tonight. But I wanted to apologize about the combat. Because if it is anything like the original, hot damn, good golly gosh, sign me up. 100% in. Apologize about the combat critique. I was completely wrong, completely missed the mark. Combat's going to be fantastic. Absolutely just amazing game. 2 hours in. Cannot wait for Hellblade 2. That's what I've been playing. And World of Warcraft, obviously, because it's back, baby. It's in my life. And then I tried Pal World. Pal World sucks. And we're going to round this show out with a viewer favorite segment on Playconomics, the Discord question of the week. For you that don't know and that aren't in the Discord, first of all, get in the Discord. And if you want to do next week's viewer question, get in the Discord, link below. What we're discussing today is, what is your gaming moment? What is your best gaming moment, either in-game, out-of-game, gaming adjacent? What do you love about video games? And what was the peak video game experience you've had? So first we got Thick Meats. Thick Meats is not part of the Thick Squad, but he's an honorary member. I have no idea who it is, but I love the naming scheme. Thick Meats said, using senior skip days, to play Modern Warfare 3 and Black Ops 2. 24-hour sessions. And I'm going to call you out. Thick Meats, you only get one senior skip day because you're only a senior once. If you were a senior more than once, little less Call of Duty, little more studying, my friend. Little more studying, my friend. Just saying. Maybe less Call of Duty. Then we got the Actuary, who beat Radahn in Elden Ring in a four-player co-op match with no summons. You were truly, truly maidenless, Liam. Truly maidenless. The CPA, OG COD Mile High Club Mile High Club achievement. Fantastic moment in gaming. 3 minutes. Get to the president. Secure the package. Love it. Great, great achievement. Beating Red in Pokemon Silver. The biggest time sink of any video game and potentially any Pokemon game ever. Love beating Red. Should have ended the series there. It's been all downhill since. And Halo 3 Nights with the boys, obviously. Halo 3, The Forge, don't even get me started. Thick Grape was hitting 91% on Through the Fire and the Flames on Guitar Hero 3 on Expert difficulty, and at one point being ranked number 7 in the world. We got a true gamer. And then also the first time that me and him, because Thick Grape is my brother, Thick Guava, live it. Live, love, and respect the guava. First time we didn't share a WoW account, and we got to play Arena together. I was terrible. I'm still mediocre. But see me in the arena. Then, me personally, hitting 1800 rating in WoW Arena and absolutely scumming a Rhett Pally for the win with my Survival Hunter. If you like World of Warcraft, ask me in the comments. I will tell you exactly what happened because I can remember it. Literally click by click. Getting diamond with the Thick Squad. Everybody but me got diamond in one weekend, and I was the only one that couldn't because I didn't play a lot at that time. Very sad, but getting the Thick Squad to diamond was an amazing experience. Beating Elden Ring before Bobby because he's hot garbage at video games and couldn't tell a good video game if it hit him in the controller. And then, last but not least, seeing the credits roll with Sarah on It Takes Two. Fantastic experience. The first video game we ever played together. We've now completed It Takes Two, Unraveled, and Baldur's Gate 3. We're starting our second playthrough now. But absolutely fantastic experience to play video games with the love of your life. My two loves in one time. And that's it for this week's episode. If you like what you heard, give us a like, subscribe, and don't forget to hit that notification bell if you don't want to miss a single piece Playconomics news. And if you want to interact with Playconomics daily, follow our socials. They are in the description. But remember, as always, Happy gaming.